Hi everyone, my name is Dennis Van Arsen and you're listening to my episode of Pop Nerd Lounge.
Welcome to Pop Nerd Lounge, the show where we share the stories of creatives to inspire fellow creatives. I'm your host, Steph Pham.
Ladies and gentlemen, jazz enthusiasts and music aficionados, today we have the distinct pleasure of hosting a remarkable talent who has taken the jazz world by storm. He's a singer, a crooner, and the winner of The Voice of Holland in 2019. Since then, he's graced stages across the Netherlands, serenading audiences with his own small big band known as the DBA Big Band. With three albums under his belt, including a captivating Christmas album filled with originals and classic, his debut work achieved gold status and secured him the prestigious Edison Jazz Award. But Dennis Van Arsen is more than just an award-winning artist, he's a passionate advocate for jazz, believing it deserves a broader audience. With a strong presence on various social media platforms, including TikTok, where he boasts over an impressive 300,000 followers, Dennis is here to share his musical journey, insights, and the timeless allure of jazz. Stay tuned as we also have an incredible performance of his viral hit, Strawberry Moon. So without further ado, let's welcome the one and only Dutch jazz sensation, Dennis Van Arsen. Welcome to Pop Nerd Lounge. Joining me is Dennis Van Arsen. Dennis, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Steph. How are you?
Doing wonderful. How are you?
Very great. There's some exciting stuff coming up, and I've been working really hard. So it's exciting times to be alive.
Definitely. The exciting thing for me is I want to know more about your story. And so for those who maybe aren't familiar with your backstory, let's start at the beginning. How did you fall in love with jazz and standards?
Yeah, that's a story I told many, many times before. But for those of the people listening who have never heard of me, I was born in 1994 to start all the way at the beginning. And when I was seven, it was 2001. My parents had the CD, the Robbie Williams CD, Swing When You're Winning, which is a classic. I love it so much. And we always used to play that when we were in the car together, play it at home. And they also bought the DVD of the concert. I'm not sure you saw that. The concert live at the Royal Albert Hall, where he just did Mr. Bojangles and My Way and all those beautiful standards. And me, as a seven-year-old boy, I was thinking, wow, Robbie Williams has great music. And I didn't know that he was singing Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, all these wonderful people I'd never heard of. But I fell in love with that music, and I saw him on stage in the Royal Albert Hall in London. And I thought, well, that's what I want. That's my dream now. I want to do that with a giant orchestra playing this fantastic music. Everybody dresses up nicely, people sitting at tables. Such a classy event, and such classy music, too. So I really fell in love with that. And then, thanks to the power of the internet, I discovered Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis, Dean Martin, Nat King Cole, you know, all of my heroes that sadly are not with us anymore, and some heroes that are with us right now who are, you know, keeping that legacy alive: Harry Connick Jr., Jamie Cullum, Michael Bublé, just to name a few. And I'd love to follow in their footsteps.
You talked about, like, there was always a constant ambition to be an entertainer, a performer, and an artist, but you had a career beforehand as a project manager. So tell me about that pivotal moment that made you decide to transition from being a project manager to pursuing your dream of being an artist.
It's really funny because, you know, like I said, since I was seven, I knew I wanted to be a singer. And I always, in the back of my mind, I always knew that at some point it was going to happen. But then one day, I was graduating high school and I applied for these several conservatory schools, music schools, rock academy. All of them either turned me down or I decided not to do it because it didn't feel right. So then I went and studied communication with a direction in the entertainment industry. So yeah, the full, I'll I'll try to save you the full name. I'll tell it. It's Communication for International Event Music and Entertainment Studies. That's a mouthful, and it looks very well and awesome on your resume, but I'm not sure it brought me any closer to the actual music industry. But then, yeah, I finished that. I got my diploma, and then what? I was 23 years old. Then, you know, I need to make some money somehow. So I just applied for a job as a project manager. And in the meantime, during my years in college, I entered Idols or the Dutch version of American Idol or, you know, X Factor and stuff. I tried all these TV talent shows, and it just, none of them really worked out. And yeah, I guess applying to those schools didn't work out. So I thought, well, maybe this is it then. And I'll just work as a project manager. And I did that for 2 years. And then I decided to give it one last shot. And the Voice of Holland, the Dutch version of The Voice, came and said, well, we saw your videos on YouTube and we saw you in this other TV show. And we thought you might be a great fit to be a contestant on The Voice. And I said, well, I'll have to talk to my boss about that because I don't know if that's going to, TV is, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of time away from the office, always during office hours. And I don't know where this is going to go, right? So I asked my boss, right? So I'm thinking of entering The Voice. What do you think? And he said, well, go for it. This is your dream, right? Just promise me one thing. Promise that you don't win because then I'll lose you and we need you here. So I said, I laughed in his face. I'm like, I'm never going to win The Voice. Like, that's never going to happen. Not in a million years. TV is fake and they already have a winner before we ever start recording. That's what's going through my mind. So I agreed. I entered The Voice and yeah, well, I think you already get where I'm going. I did actually win and it was crazy. I got to sing the songs that, you know, I my blind audition was That's Life, which is also my most streamed song on all the streaming platforms. And it was awesome that I got to sing that music because usually on The Voice, they only allow contestants to sing pop music or top 40 music, very current, very modern music. And I said, well, I'd love to try this crooner angle on this. I'd love to sing jazz because I think that's, nobody does that in this country. And I want to figure out if that's because nobody can or because nobody likes it. And so they said, all right, go and sing That's Life. And then everybody liked it. So the only conclusion I could draw from that is that apparently nobody else did it in the Netherlands. Nobody else was a crooner. I think I was the only one who at least wanted to do that on a large commercial scale. So then I got to sing Mr. Bojangles, The Lady is a Tramp, all those fantastic, fantastic songs. And the audience votes and they voted for me. I won and I quit my job and, well, recorded my first album within 6 months of winning that. Did a theater tour with a big band through the whole country, selling out 16 or 17 theaters. It's all of a sudden, in 1 year, my life turned from, well, I'm a project manager and I'm good at my job and I love my colleagues and I have a fantastic work environment, to I'm writing songs, I'm releasing an album, I'm playing shows, and anything can happen. That was like mind-blowing for me. And yeah, then the fact that anything can happen was proven then a couple months later when COVID hit and we got to do nothing. There was no shows for 2 years and no gigs, and we were indoors locked up for 2 years. So it's, I guess that's life. To make it a full circle to my blind audition, that's life.
I want to talk about one of your performances on the Voice of Holland, because I actually stumbled upon it on YouTube as well. And it really stood out to me because you covered the song Modern World. And to me, going in blind, I totally thought it was the way that you guys arranged it, the way that you performed, I thought it was an original. And so tell me about the backstory of that performance and what the reception has been since you performed that song. And it's on your debut album. So tell me.
It is.
Yeah.
So that's a funny story. On The Voice, there are coaches, and three of those coaches, one of them was mine, and two other coaches, they were huge fans. They were like, Dennis, this is who you are, and you're a crooner, so you have to sing this music in every round forward. You know, you're a contestant to win. As far as I'm concerned, it's up to the audience at home, but as far as we're concerned, you're one of the favorites. And then the fourth coach, which was a woman called Anouk, fantastic singer. She's entered Eurovision for Holland. She has multiple fantastic, incredible records. Fantastic singer. And she's known to be, well, kind of a really straightforward, direct, Dutch, strong woman who is not afraid to share her opinion, even though it might hurt your feelings. And she was the only coach on The Voice that said, well, Dennis, yeah, the fact that you can sing Frank Sinatra, we know that now. So now I want to hear you do something else and see how musically talented you really are. And, you know, pick a song that is from this century and take it to your place, which made a lot of sense. I didn't take that as criticism at all. I just said, all right, let's try and do that. And then my coach, who was Waylon, also a Dutch singer who entered Eurovision, by the way, came in second. He said, all right, Anouk, you want to hear him take a song from this century and bring it to his field? Well, take your song. And one of her biggest hits is Modern World. So I was scared as hell to perform her song in front of her in a totally new arrangement, you know, arranged by Jelle Jonge, one of the horn players in The Voice band back then. And he just absolutely nailed that arrangement. I totally agree. I heard it for the first time and I thought, well, is this the same song? I mean, it's the same lines and the same melody, but wow. It's like a whole new world opened up. And that worked so well. I sing that in the grand finals of The Voice. And me and my coach decided that that was going to be my first single coming out the day after the big finale. And that's also why I chose to put it on my debut album, which came out 6 months later.
Well, you mentioned your big band, the DVA Big Band, and I want to know, what was the process of forming it and how did they contribute to your unique musical style?
Oh, they found me. When I won The Voice, it's like so many doors opened then. And I got emails and DMs and messages from people all over the country, big bands, amateur big bands, professional big bands, musicians, arrangers, producers. They all of a sudden, they want to work with you. So I kind of took a step back, took it all in and figured out who were the right people for me to work with. I need a manager. I need a sound guy. And then next step is figure out together what band fits with that. And there was a band that was already existing. And there were young jazz musicians, all, you know, musically educated, fantastic players. And they had a pretty big range of arrangements ready for me to play. So we were basically, on day one, we were ready to play a two-hour set, which was awesome. And I'm very thankful for that. Now, that band kind of ceased to exist because of COVID, but six of the band members followed me to form what would become the DVA Big Band in 2020. But that first step was really so important, and many of those guys actually stayed. Some musicians had to quit being a musician and take another job because, you know, it's very hard not to be able to work for 2 years and have no assurance of when the world would open back up. And, you know, we're all musicians that make our living mostly by playing live, since jazz music is, at least in the Netherlands, not a very mainstream radio-friendly type of music. So I have to perform in order to make money, which is great and which works, but COVID wasn't easy for that. So that's how the DVA Big Band was formed, and we actually had rehearsals for the past couple of days with those guys, and it's incredible. Their talent is so incredibly large. Like they can take an arrangement that's written fantastically and then say, pinpoint where it needs more expression or maybe less, or maybe it needs a crescendo, and they just take it to a whole new level. So it's really awesome for me to hear, if I listen back to my first album and compare that to my third album, which came out last Christmas, the difference to me in sound, in arrangement, you know, of all the music, it's mostly the same musicians, same arranger, same singer, definitely, same producer even. But if I hear the difference, man, we all just grew so incredibly much. And that's one of the things that I value a lot about working together with the same group of people for now 4.5 years. It really pays off, that loyalty. I love that.
I love it too. And not to go on a side tangent, but one of your heroes, and actually one of my musical heroes, because I adore him, Michael Bublé, I got to interview one of his trumpet players in his big band. And you know what really astounds me about Michael Bublé is the loyalty that he has. Some of his musicians he's had in his band for more than a decade, more almost his whole full two-decade career. And they really like make or break a crooner's journey. And so just the fact that you were able to find a tribe and a really solid big band that you've carried throughout your musical journey and that you've had this growth, I really admire it because, yeah, like it really takes just the finding the right people and like keeping the right people and having that loyalty.
Absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned Michael Bublé because I sang with him in 2019 and his conductor, Nick Jacobson Larson, shout out to him. He's amazing. I actually reached out to him after the show because this is a long story that I'm trying to tell, but he had sent the video of me singing with Michael Bublé. We sang That's Life together, and he sent it to the original author of That's Life, who then reached out to me, sent me an email saying, well, Nick Jacobson Larson sent me the video of you singing my song. Thank you for keeping it alive. It means the world to me. I wish you all the best. Your talent deserves it. Something like that. Like the sweetest email ever. And incredible that Dean Kay is his name. The author of the song that changed my whole life reached out to me. That meant awesome. That meant so much. So I reached out to Nick Jacobson Larson, and we had a little chat. We had a little Zoom, and at some point he might, you know, want to arrange something for my upcoming album. This is back in 2020. So we were talking about that, and he also mentioned that, you know, the Bublé band and crew, they're all a family and touring the world, and that just the way he spoke, passionate way he spoke about that family, that was super inspiring to me. And I would love to have the same thing. And I think we're working on that. I think we are getting there. We just need a world tour or five to get there. But you know, who knows? Maybe in the future.
Hey nerds, thank you for sticking around with us. We hope you're enjoying the episodes so far. We're always looking to improve the show, so any and all feedback you can give us is greatly appreciated. We're also constantly on the lookout for creatives to feature, so if you think you'd be perfect or know someone we should speak to, let us know. We can be reached over on our contact page at popnerdlounge.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of the episode.
So you've released three albums. How do you balance original compositions with jazz standards? Because that selection process, I know, must be incredibly difficult. And I want to know, how do you form that to stay authentic to your style and stay authentic to your vision of keeping the standards in jazz alive?
That's a very good question. Because I post a lot of covers and standards on TikTok, on YouTube, on Instagram, on all my socials. But on my albums, they are mostly absent. So most of my albums have 8 to 10 originals and then 2 covers. And mostly those covers are rearranged as we did with Modern World. Like take a song that's well known and put it in a big band arrangement and you know, take it to a new place. That's not a standard. So the only standard that I have out, if I'm correct, on one of my albums is That's Life. And that's because, you know, of the whole story I just told you, that song changed my life, and it's the song that people also, you know, they love to hear me sing that, apparently. And I love to sing it too. Yeah, people really request for me to release standards and the Great American Songbook songs on Spotify. So I might do an album in the future, but for now, in this, you know, I'm in the start of my career. I've not been in this field for 5 years. We have a rule. Me and my manager, we say in Dutch, wie schrijft, die blijft, which basically translates to those who write stay alive, basically. So I've been focusing a lot on writing original material and see where that brings me, all in the spirit of that Great American Songbook, of that, you know, big band crooner style. Mostly there are some pop songs in there too, but, you know, all played by a big band and with the soul of that era. But now there's 3 albums full of original material, so who knows? I might do a Frank Sinatra tribute album or a Tony Bennett tribute album. Or do some albums about the Great American Songbook. Who knows? There's so many great songs out there already, you know, written by, you know, greats like Dean Kay or Lawrence and Hart. You know, so many great songs are out there, and they deserve a place in any age, really. So also nowadays, yeah.
On your record, How to Live, you wrote a musical pep talk called I Still Got It. What gives you a confidence boost these days?
Well, one of the big confidence boosts I got recently is the fact that my TikTok kind of blew up. And it's funny, confidence comes and goes. I think this goes for any artists out there. It's a hassle. It's a lot of hard work behind the scenes, and people only see the great bits and the good bits. But definitely COVID was so incredibly difficult for me in my private life too, but professionally definitely was almost devastating. And I don't think the lockdown should have lasted for 6 months longer than I probably would have been back to being a project manager. So that definitely had a huge impact on my confidence, not being able to play with my band, but also missing the audience. So playing live and getting that synergy on stage, getting that energy from a live audience, that's one of the biggest boosts of confidence that I can get. But that also works digitally, apparently, because now, yeah, one of the songs that was on my first album that came out 4 years ago now sort of went, well, semi-viral on TikTok, got 650,000 views. And all of a sudden, it's up to 7,000 streams a day, which is a times 10 compared to a month ago, which is crazy and it's insane. And so many people are now discovering me as an artist or my music, which has been out there for years. So that is really awesome. And it's reassuring to read all the sweet comments and the DMs that people are sending me. And that's humbling and also the thing that keeps me going, which is funny. So I'd love to tell this story. So many people, after I play a show, people would come up to me and say, well, keep going. You're amazing. Keep going. And it went without saying, like, of course I'm going to keep going. What are you talking about? Why would I not keep going? Until at one point in the last year, I was like, maybe I'm in the wrong. Maybe I'm not good. Maybe I'm not good enough. What am I doing? I'm trying things and they're not really working. And, you know, the theaters here in this country are still feeling the effects of the lockdowns and people are not buying tickets. And so I'm not selling out all of my shows anymore, which I was spoiled back in 2019, obviously, with the momentum coming out of The Voice of Holland, big TV show, millions of people watching. Then 2 years of nothing. And then I'm not selling out theaters anymore. Now we're growing. But at some point when I was down, I thought, well, maybe I just suck. If I'm not able to sell out theaters, then maybe this job is just not for me. I see people around me succeed. Why am I not succeeding? And that's horrible. And then something like this TikTok thing happens, it blows up and people are sending me love from all over the world, literally. That can, you know, reignite that spark of why I got into this business. And then also it hit me how much it meant that people are telling me keep going. It wasn't self-sure anymore. It did go without saying that I was going to keep going. But now, obviously, I went through some things and now it's like, yeah, of course, I'm going to keep going no matter what. That's the only thing. I'm going to be a singer. I'm going to be an artist, songwriter for the rest of my life, because I know there's people out there that enjoy my music. And if it's not millions, then it's maybe hundreds. And that's okay, too.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your vulnerability. And because I completely understand what it feels to have those voices of self-doubt. I think every creative experiences that. But a little side tangent on my part, a little sidebar on my part, that's actually your TikTok that blew up, the Strawberry Moon one, was the one that that's how I discovered about you. And I got really excited because it just reminded me, funny enough, here in the States, there was a young gentleman by the name of Austin Giorgio. He auditioned for The Voice in the same manner he wanted to keep like the crooner style alive. And so it just like seeing this journey, it reminded me of that. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's like another young artist who wants to keep this style alive. Because, you know, I grew up listening to Michael Bublé ever since I was 16 years old. And that's how I discovered about the Great American Songbook and jazz. And for me, just seeing you continue that and to keep it going and to not only with covering songs, but penning incredible originals, I was just like, I need to know more about this guy. And ever since I stumbled upon your Forever You album, I've had it on repeat. I just had to tell you to your face that I've had that album on repeat since the day I discovered it. So it, you know, I am so glad that you're deciding to keep being an artist, because honestly, like, it gives me joy. And so I hope that you experience the same, you know, going through on along this path, and, you know, just knowing that others out there are rooting and cheering you on to continue this.
It means the world to me that you say that, Steph. Thank you so much. That's it's true. Thank you. I will keep going. But yeah, I think every creative, maybe every person in the world, it has that self-doubt. And that's also one of the important things about finding the right people around you. I have, you know, my manager will, you know, get me back up. I have writers, I have musicians, my girlfriend, my family, they're all super supportive. So whenever I'm down, they will, you know, hold up a mirror. And one of the things that my girlfriend told me, she said, well, 5 years ago, it was your dream to be a singer. You were a project manager. Imagine where you're going to be 5 years from now. And looking back at this moment where, you know, you're starting out, just if you keep going, it's going to be amazing. You're going to look back and think, oh my God, I've achieved so much. If I look back at what I've achieved over the past 5 years, are you kidding me? I never thought that I would be able to pull that off. Release 3 albums, do hundreds of theater shows, sell tens of thousands of tickets, play festivals, have a gold record. Forever You is certified gold in this country. I have a gold record on the wall. I could have never imagined that 5 years ago. So that was kind of an eye opener, a reality check. Whenever I'm down, she just holds up that mirror, and the right people around you will do that for you. So yeah, that's, you can't do it alone. That's a big, big message, a big lesson for me.
Well, you have exciting things on the horizon, and one of them is your Christmas show in New York at 54 Below. What are you looking forward to most performing there in such an iconic venue?
Oh, well, it's going to be my second time playing there. I played there in February of last year, and that was nerve-wracking. I thought, I have no fans in the United States, basically. And here I am, this Dutch guy. He's coming to sing American songs, like an American genre from the Great American Songbook. This guy from Holland, he's coming over here to do that. Who does he think he is? Right? I think, oh, they're gonna hate me. The first song we did, the crowd just went crazy. And I love the American crowd. They're so different from what I'm used to here in the Netherlands. So people in Holland, I can play a show and the whole front row, there could be 5 people sitting, arms crossed, looking at me like this the whole time. And I could be like, oh, am I bombing? Am I doing terrible? Am I singing? Am I hearing this right? Am I off? Is the band off? Are people not enjoying it? And then those 5 people that I thought are hating the show, they would come up to me after the show and they say, you know what? You're amazing. I loved it. I'll buy it. Yeah, just, I'll take all the albums. Can you sign them out to Greg? It would just be, and there was just such a mismatch to what they were feeling and what they were actually expressing in my mind. And with New Yorkers, at least, that's as far as my field of reference goes, they're just, if they love it, they will cheer you until you die. It's incredible. I had never experienced anything like that. I was almost at the stage where I'm like, I'm not really that good. That you're cheering way too loud for me right now. There's people coming flying over from Chicago. There was a girl who flew from Brazil to New York because that was the closest I was probably ever going to be to her. And I was like, no, you're crazy. I'm really not that special. You're doing that for me. I couldn't believe it. Like this, that's how down to earth us Dutchies are, apparently. But that's also what I love about Americans, and that's what I'm looking forward to the most, beside playing with an amazing American big band, you know, made up of New York fantastic jazz cats. That's so much to look forward to. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome.
Well, I only have one final question before we get to your performance, which I'm super excited about. My final question for you, Dennis, and this has just been incredible. I appreciate your time and energy and just absolute wealth of knowledge that you've given here on the show. But my final question for you is, why are you a creative?
Oh, why am I a creative? I'm not sure that's a conscious decision. I think you're born a creative. And yeah, like I said, I was 7 when I decided I wanted to be a singer. And there was always something inside me that knew it was going to happen. It's just life works in mysterious ways, and you could fail a million times. And then the 1,000,000 and first time you actually succeed. And that's what happened with me. Why am I creative? I love just sharing my views with the world. And the way I do that is by performing, by singing, by songwriting. And that's one of the things I love to do is share the messages. Like you mentioned earlier, I still got it. I think that could mean a lot to a lot of people. Most of my songs are love songs because I think that people sometimes need reminding of that love is the most important thing in life. And if you have that in order, then you can work on all the rest, on all your ambitions, but have that stable basis in love and relationship, and you know, not be open to temptations or whatever seems like could be fun or great. No, having a valuable relationship or love, whether that's from friends or a significant other, that's up to you. But love is the most important thing. I think there's more things that I would love to share with the people that I've learned in my very short life up to this point that I think more people could focus on. So maybe that's the answer.
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, let me applaud that. That was fantastic. And to quote a great standard, the greatest thing you'll ever learn is to be loved and to be loved in return. So, you know what? Just kind of full circle for our conversation. And I am so excited to introduce your performance because, first of all, I love this song. And so I'm excited for our audience to hear it. And I guess without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, performing Strawberry Moon, Dennis Van Orsen.
All right, here we go.
Girls, the skies are gray, ever colder, and the winds get bolder. Hills, all night and day, I need to hold her, but I never told her. Her smile warms my soul, and it tempers the cold when winter melts into spring. Oh, the strawberry moon, it needs no reason, it just shows up in June. It kicks off the season, and now is the time to fall in love. Oh, my strawberry moon, no, it won't keep me waiting. Always on time, and it seems like we're dead in. Look at her glow, it climbs higher and higher. My strawberry moon is on fire. Now the stars are the skies are clear, ever brighter, ever lighter. Close her eyes so near, and I'll guide her ever tighter. And right there and then, our story began. We'll be back here every year. The strawberry moon, no, it needs no reason, it just shows up in June. And it kicks off the season, and now is the time to fall in love. My strawberry moon, no, it won't keep me waiting, it's always on time. It seems like we're dead in, and look at her glow.
climbs higher and higher. My strawberry moon is on fire.
Thank you so much.
My goodness. Oh, that just made me so happy. Oh my gosh. Well, Dennis, it's been incredible having you on the show. I'm going to turn the floor over to you, and you can tell our audience where to find you on social media, where to check your music out, and anything else that you would like to plug.
So I don't have an artist name because, as you heard in the story that I've told, I was a project manager when I decided to enter The Voice of Holland under my own name, which is Dennis van Aarsen, in Dutch, Dennis van Aarsen. It's three words. And you can find me with that on Instagram, on Facebook, TikTok, YouTube. That's where I post covers. And TikTok is kind of blowing up. I'm loving that. I'm going live there every once in a while. And I'm also on all streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, wherever. And that's where you can find all of my albums. If you like Christmas music, I have some incredible Christmas music coming up to add to my Christmas album this year. So yeah, Dennis van Aarsen, that's the name.
Dennis, thank you so much. I've had an incredible time chatting with you. Yeah.
Me too. Thank you so much, Steph. Awesome.
Special thanks to Dennis for being this episode's guest. If you want to learn more about Dennis, visit the links in the show notes. Popner Lounge is executively produced by Vico and Steph Pham. Vico serves as the creative director and Steph Pham is the host and editor. To find out more information about Popner Lounge, visit our website, popnerlounge.com. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope you join us next time for another conversation with a fellow creative. I'm your host, Steph Pham.